Welcome, everybody. I'm Jared, he's DJ, and this is Number One Bullshit.
The King of Rio is back, baby.
He is back, and the pop that he got when he walked out was insane. You want to talk about... I wanted to say it was disrespectful to Martinez, but it was more about it being respectful to Aldo.
Yeah.
As Martinez is the ranked fighter and he had to walk first.
Yeah, but I mean, come on.
King of Rio and Rio.
It's a legend. Here's the thing. The crowd, you could tell, was exhausted by that time because after Aldo won, even though it wasn't like some... He could have knocked him out. I really think he could have knocked him out. But the crowd wasn't excited while he was talking that much. You know, like, they're tired. It's hot in there, whatever. I'm going to say this. My heart wanted Aldo to win so bad. I thought Martinez was going to have a better showing, though. I thought it was going to be way closer. He froze him.
Mm-hmm.
Aldo froze Martinez.
Yeah.
But he got the dub, and I'm so happy.
Yeah, it was awesome to see. The thing I don't like about it is that Aldo's now like, well, I'm going to come back for the belt.
I know.
It's like, just let that be your ride off into the sunset moment because, yes, you beat Jonathan Martinez, but nothing that happened there leads me to believe you beat Merab.
No, and not even that. It's like you're training consistently for boxing, which is just nobody else is. In the UFC, people aren't training boxing. They're going to train the other things. And eventually you're going to slow down because in the third round, Martinez did, until he got caught, Martinez was a little bit quicker, a little bit like Aldo looked a little tired. But man, Aldo just like that championship legendary resolve that he has is so fun to watch.
What was really fun was seeing him figure Martinez out
because
Martinez was battering the leg initially. Inside and outside.
And then stop throwing kicks.
Yeah. Well, he got one checked.
Yeah.
The second he got one checked, it was towards the end of the first round. He didn't throw another inside leg kick the rest of the fight.
Weird.
Yeah. I think it hurt like shit, probably is my guess. But that was really weird to me was, okay, he figured out your timing on that, but like now try to set it up. Now it's three more minutes into the fight and you've been basically headhunting now. You know, it was interesting to me that he didn't do it, but it answered the question that we talked about last week. Like who can check Martinez's leg kicks? And if it's anybody, it is Aldo. And it was really, really fun to watch. Like he didn't come close the first time trying to check it.
Yeah.
And then it was like, all right, got a little closer and then pop. Got it. And it's like, oh, he just figured him out. And to see that in real time is always fun.
It was really fun to watch because, like I said, I was rooting for Aldo. Like, everything in me was like, come on, man, do well. And I'm like, once Martinez throws his first leg kick, you're like, oh, God. You know, like, you have that memories of what he's done. But boy, did he freeze. He looked like he was stuck in the mud. Like, I don't know if it's a moment because you have the commentator saying, you know, he shouldn't get starstruck. And then Dean Thomas saying that he looks like he's starstruck. I don't know if that's what it is, but he just couldn't figure Aldo out. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame because, like, that's what your last fight is what everybody remembers. Yeah. And you lost to a 37-year-old guy that was retired. It's not a good look. And to your comment, it's another Factory X misstep, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting with that camp when these guys are getting on the biggest stage. They tend to freeze, like not just lose in like hard fought battles, but they tend to freeze a little bit. We've seen it with Gutierrez. We saw it here with Jonathan Martinez. We've seen it with Anthony Smith in the past. We've seen it with Dustin Jacoby in the past. To an extent, we saw it with Brandon Royval against Pantoja.
Yeah.
And then similar to that fight or to the Martinez Aldo fight, it was like in the final round, where then they've kind of found themselves and like, oh shit, like this fight is getting away from me. Like I have to try to do something. I wonder what it is. It would be pure speculation. You know, is it something in training where they're so used to that high intensity wars that especially at the lower weight classes that those guys are having in the gym that it's everything kind of feels like a sparring session. I don't know, but we've seen Factory X fighters freeze a couple times on the big stage.
Well, it also could just be, and this is pure speculation, but it just could be that camp hasn't leveled up to that level yet. They haven't leveled up to the championship level where you get one person that has that and that can prove it. Because they all seem like they have that skill set.
Yes.
It's just they don't have, there's something that they can't break that glass ceiling. And then once you have that camp levels up and then you see it. Because, I mean, like, imagine being an alpha male with Uriah Faber. It's like, okay, well, you know, like, we're going to have... We have someone that's been there. Izzy's camp. I can't think. City Kickboxing. You know, like, we have a champion, even if no one else is going to be champion. So maybe they just need to break it. But I will say, I love the Brazilian crowd. Some people, like, shit on the Brazilian crowd because they were... Like, the seats were empty.
To start, yeah, it was kind of strange.
But, like, even at the Pantoja fight, at the end of the Pantoja fight, like, the seats were empty. And it's like, and he even had to say, don't walk out. You guys, don't walk out right now. It's like, whatever. But them chanting Aldo, was just beautiful, right? And that's got to get to you, too, right? You're Martinez, you're hot. You're the second to last fight. It's a big moment. This is a career-defining moment for you. And everybody in the crowd hates me. You know, it's like, there's got to be a point to it. But, I mean, Martinez didn't look terrible. But he didn't look good, and it's a shame because I don't know what favors the UFC owes him now, and they really don't, you know?
Yeah, in that division.
Right? Yeah.
I think,
it's bantamweight.
Yeah, I think there's going to be, talking about owing, whenever you see a camp like that that has a ton of guys, like it's every single week, Mark Montoya is in the corner for a UFC event every single week, Saif Saud, John Wood, like there's these certain camps. So I think there's something between those camps and the UFC where, you know, they're going to help their guys out because they're providing guys and they're going to be there every week. Their guys make weight. You know, I think there's something to that. And I think that's a very good point. Once they get their first guy to break through, then it's going to be like, oh, that's what it takes.
Yep.
Let's all rise to that level. But you love to see it for Aldo. It made me happy watching it. Just like that's fucking sweet. The other thing that made me happy was seeing a man backflip onto another man, kick him in the head.
Kick him in the head, illegal.
Illegally.
Where's Diego when you need him?
Yeah. Apparently he needs to fight Diego Sanchez again. We're talking about Michel Pajeda because he got reckless again.
Yeah.
he's pretty lucky that didn't cost him the fight.
I
think what happened is live. They're like, fuck it. We'll let him get the, we're not going to take it from him. And then we'll let the commission sort it out. Because I don't know what you see on that replay where you're not like, oh, that's illegal.
Yeah. even if you try to justify it, well, he did his shoulders, but he still hit his chin.
Yeah.
And then after that, he finishes him pretty quickly. Like, the fight only lasted 8 seconds or whatever.
54 seconds.
Yeah. So, but man, how fun is he? He didn't dance.
Huh. Didn't dance on the way out.
On the way out, yeah.
Yeah. I saw a tweet. Somebody was talking about, it looks like he's walking out to accept an award. Yeah, he was just like kind of smiling, you know. Yeah,
like waving to everybody, like saying what's up.
But you want to talk about a terrifying human being.
Dude.
That's three fights at middleweight, and he's been in the cage for a total of, I believe it's 3 minutes, 3 seconds. I mean, Justin.
So you're saying give him a championship fight next?
I want to watch him fight every single week. His power has to be something different because the very first straight to the body. I mean, Poirier had a decent poker face, but you could see in the body language of like, oh, that just changed things.
Yeah.
Like he just felt that power, and that doesn't have to be one touch knockout power.
No,
but that is fight changing power. What he has, he touches you. And from that point on, the fight goes different. And then the squeeze on that standing guillotine
tapped and he still went out.
Yeah. Tapped, went out, started seizing and choking on his mouthpiece.
Scary.
Yeah. Very scary.
He hit his head on his way down. I think that's what.
Well, it was kind of weird because he didn't when he initially slumped and it was fucking John Jones cold-blooded with Michelle Pajeda to just let him go and walk away. But he just slumped and then it was from like a seated position that he hit his head on the ground. But yeah, that was scary for him to have that happen. And just, what do you do with Pajeda, right? Like you have to give him a ranked opponent at this point.
I was just about to say, we've talked about this ad nauseum. The middleweight division has this bubble and we're not necessarily ready for these guys to test themselves. I'm ready for him to test himself. I'm ready for him to be jump over all the other bubble athletes that we have that are like right there that I'm ready to see. I'm ready to see him fight a top 15 guy. Fuck it.
Yes. I would say, I mean, you can have the Chris Curtis test because you know Chris Curtis is not going anywhere. Yeah. It might lead to Pajeda being in the cage for more than a minute.
Maybe.
Pfeiffer has that fight coming up that we talked about with Marc-Andre Barrio. Yep. That could be a fun one. Mm-hmm. And then, because I think when you have your shiny new toys, when you have your prospects like a Pfeiffer, you give them grace after the first loss, right? Correct. You might try to protect them on the way up. They had the first loss. Okay, let's reset with this guy. But if he gets a win again, it's like, hey, man, you got to go now.
Correct.
So I think that could be one. And then also, I think, you know, Roman Kopylov, if he beats Cesar Almeida, which is just going to be a very fun kickboxing fight.
Correct.
But if he wins that one, that is a very, very intriguing fight. And then depending on how long Pajeda's out, you know, Fluffy did tear the ligaments in his hand. But when Fluffy comes back, because Fluffy's almost that test for people, even though he's a prospect himself. Because, he is not
going anywhere. He's different. Yeah, he's different. Yeah.
He has championship mental. Now, we'll see about the skills once he gets to top 10, top 5 guys. Yeah.
You're right. He has that mentality for me that's like a Brendan Allen where you're like, I believe this guy can be a champion. Mm-hmm. Right? And where it's like, there's something special about him. I just want to see Pajeda fight everybody every weekend.
Yes.
So fun.
So much fun. So much fun. We'll go straight to the other middleweight with Kyle Bahalio.
Man.
Dude, that was a pretty impressive performance, right? And I loved his statement afterwards. I'm a fight nerd. I do my homework. And when the test comes, I take an A+. Because that was very smart. We talked last week about we wanted to see the grappling exchange. He wanted no part of it.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very intriguing.
But we kind of were like, maybe he'll indulge, right?
Yeah, just to test himself.
I'm not going to. Nope. I'm going to knock you out.
Yeah, and we don't see Paul Craig get slumped like that. Like, dude, that was scary.
That knee? The flying knee?
And the interesting thing was it looked like Bahalio could not find his range initially. He was like jumping in with the hook.
Yeah.
But then once he started stepping off and throwing the straight left, he clipped him, caught him with the flying knee, and then he had the left to the right to the, you know, the left that ended up slumping him.
Yeah.
But that was a great performance from Bahalio, a guy who catches criticism for not being able to finish fights.
Can flow.
Yeah. So that was to do that on that stage to kick off that card. We had talked about going into on the preview last week that might be the fight that has a bit of a lull in the on the main card.
Were we wrong?
way wrong. And he ended up getting a performance bonus for that. But then
wait. So you're saying him versus Pajeda next? Is that what you're saying?
That would be fun, but I think those are two guys you can kind of keep away from each other. Yeah. Also, my man is translating for himself in the cage. Like, hey, translator, get away from me.
He said, man.
Yeah, don't touch me. Just stand back. And without even being prompted, just answered in Portuguese, answered in English, Portuguese, English.
But that's awesome. What makes someone special. I mean, yes. This guy's special, right? Like, he had his last fight against, who did he just fight last?
Oh, it was the confusing performance.
The William Dafoe?
Yes, the Dafoe.
My mind has Imavov. Magomedov.
Magomedov, yes.
Where it's like, okay, that if that's the one-off, I'm okay with that. And sometimes, mm-hmm. I mean, we even saw the great Anderson Silva have one-off fights, right? Yep. Where it's just like, this is weird. But if he's going to show up like he has been and go and has that star power quality, like, I mean, it's exciting. That middleweight division is so good. And sometimes you forget how good it is, how fun it is. You have a lot of personalities. You have Brendan Allen. You have Paul Acosta. You know, have Whitaker. You have even Marvin Vettori, even if he's weird and kind of like a nerd, he's still, you have Bahalio. You have Michel Pajeda. You have so many fun people
Fluffy.
In the middle.
Fluffy.
Yeah, like all these.
Bo Nickel.
So you're seeing all these people that not only are killers, but with a personality. That division is like sneaking up on bantamweight, you know? Like,
yeah, it is as intriguing of a division as we have. Even if it's like, I still think the most skilled is bantamweight.
Of course.
Middleweight is one of the more intriguing ones we have. Like, we didn't even mention Izzy, right? Like,
Did you say Izzy? For personality.
Yes.
And I'm just talking about like the personality.
I mean, you got that. You got Strickland. Like, there's so many. And the champ, right? Like, there's
and it's wild. Oh yeah, that's right. And it's wild because like, I think the difference between middleweight and bantamweight for me is that bantamweight, the further you go down, 20, 25, 30, 35 rank, it's still fucking good. I think there's a bit of a steeper decline in middleweight, but that top 15, and the bubble that we have, maybe the top 25 in middleweight, goddamn, like they are really shining. That division's really shining.
Yes. Yeah. As far as Bahalio, what comes next? He asked for Jared Cannonier. Cannonier, as we talked about last week, is booked to fight Imavov. So I don't see that happening unless, you know, Imavov can't make it to the fight. I think one that is very, very interesting, and his opponent just dropped out, Roman Dolidze.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to go, you know, if you want that top 10 fighter, like short notice, you know, he's ready. Obviously, Bahalio's ready. He didn't take any damage. Is that something where with somebody who is as academic about fighting as Bahalio is he the kind of guy that will take a short notice fight? I don't know.
Yeah.
Or if he feels, you know, his game plan is one of his strengths, so he needs to be able to have a full camp. But that's one that could be fun. And then always Hermanson. I don't think they would make Hermanson fight down because he just fought down and did a really good job. Yeah. If the UFC follows the pattern that we've talked about with fight down, and then we'll allow you to, you know, fight back up again.
Well, speaking of the fight down, fight up, Anthony Smith, you called it. You said if he wins, give him a fight up.
Yes. Yeah. He, and especially after that performance, like, and Anthony Smith was saying it all week, like, there's levels to the game. He has almost 60 professional fights.
Insane, dude.
And you could see it. I mean, obviously, physically, Petrino was the more imposing specimen.
Yeah.
But when you look at Anthony Smith, immediately, like, jab, I'm not letting you get near me. And then he went full chael sonnen, I can't let you near me. And then the calf kick.
Calf kick,
yeah. We talked about it last week. Like, Petrino hangs out with Yuri a little too much and does not check calf kicks. And I thought it was funny post-fight when Anthony Smith was talking about it. He's like, you know, everyone does it to me, so I figure I'd try to do it before they could do it to me.
Well, why are you talking about Anthony Smith so much? He didn't win, right? Bruce Buffer said.
Hey, Bruce.
Yeah, he didn't win, right?
Hey, Bruce, and still undefeated.
So Anthony Smith was like, what, bro? Hey,
I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat. They did not follow the script.
Sure.
that the UFC had already laid out. But no, awesome performance for Anthony Smith. And we talk about it every week. Like, there are levels to the game, and you don't know with some of these prospects, regardless of how good they look, until they prove it against top-level talent. And I was it's a little unfortunate for Petrino because light heavyweight doesn't have a lot of prospects.
Yeah.
And so he kind of had to go quickly. It's a scenario where I almost wish, kind of the only other light heavyweight prospect at this point, or there's two, Carlos Olberg and Bogdan Guskov.
Yeah.
And Guskov's ranked now, so he's going to go. I would have almost liked to have seen Olberg or Guskov move faster than Petrino because they're both older. Guskov at least has more experience. Like, with Petrino, I feel like they almost did a disservice by having him fight not just a ranked opponent, but somebody who has almost 60 professional fights, because it was a very elementary mistake he made. He just didn't even address the guillotine.
I agree, but, like, realistically, Olberg's fighting next week. We'll talk about it on Wednesday's podcast against the number 11.
Yeah.
And then Anthony Smith's number 10. It's like, even if you flip-flopped him, it's kind of the same thing, right? But I agree with you. Anthony Smith's that guy. And we talked about it a little bit earlier before we pressed record on this podcast. Anthony Smith didn't look amazing in terms of, like, the guillotine was nice and like, the way he did that. But he looked experienced, and if you still have a little bit of a chin, the heart, the drive, the experience is going to kick in. And Anthony Smith showed it yesterday. It's a good moment for him because I really thought Petrino was going to be able to find his chin, and maybe that's because I saw Roundtree find his chin, and you're like, okay, is this what we're kind of see? But Anthony Smith showed what he's about, and what he's about is like, you guys, I'm not washed. Everybody thinks I'm washed. I'm not. I'm an analyst, sure, but I'm still training. So good for him. But everything you said about Petrino, it's right. It's unfortunate because what do you do with him now?
Yeah,
right? He had his chance. He didn't get it. Now people aren't going to believe in him, and that's just how the sport is.
And yeah, and the aftermath too. He was like smiling, and you know, it was almost like
I felt like he got a "you caught me" moment. I made a mistake. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, and it almost felt like okay.
Yeah,
you know, and there, I go back and forth on that with professional athletes of the, I appreciate somebody having something outside of him. They talked about him being like a crazy talented musician, apparently.
Oh, word. Didn't know that.
But like, I appreciate athletes not being like, this is my whole life. But then there's also something to somebody being married to the game and everything means that much more to them, you know, win or lose, probably psychologically not the healthiest, but also can help with that drive to get to where you want to be.
And I wouldn't put that quality on him just because I don't know him. Obviously, I don't know him. But it didn't seem to me like he doesn't care. But it almost seemed like a Clay Guida loss or a Mighty Mouse loss where they're like, okay, I know. I got it. I'm going to go back and I'll show my emotions. I'll obsess over it afterwards. I don't need to do it now. And I don't mind it if that's the case. And I always give the benefit of the doubt of like, he's probably devastated. But you're on TV. Like, you know, like Jonathan Martinez is crying in the cage. And that's okay, too. It's okay to show that. But it's also okay to be like, you know what, I'll deal with it in the back because, like, you saw it with even a Conor McGregor. He gets in the back after losing and he's crying, but he doesn't want to show it to the thing because the marketing stuff. So, look, good for Anthony Smith. Got a dub, and he's still that guy. He's still the Neil Magny of that light heavyweight. You want to get top 10, you got to go through me, and it's not going to be easy.
Yeah.
I'm not giving up on myself.
He's going to hold the mirror up. Like, are you ready? I think UFC needs to follow the pattern and let him fight up. You know, Nikita Krylov hasn't fought in forever. I think that would be a fun one. I would say Ozdemir, but they fought.
Yeah.
And granted, it was a while ago, but that would be one. And then Jan Blachowicz, because I think we're at a point with Blachowicz where we don't, you know, I don't know if he's going to ever contend again. And like, I get he's ranked at 3, but do we think he's beating Geary? Do we think he's beating Hill? Do we think he's beating Poatan? Like,
do I think he's beating them? I wouldn't put my money on it. Do I think
Roundtree?
I think he can beat them? Yeah, I think he can. I think until I see Blachowicz not be able to. I don't think, and man, it's a shitty thing to say. I just, in my mind, I'm like, he can't be around for too much longer, right?
Who, Anthony Smith?
Anthony Smith.
Yeah.
Where it's like, why not give him that? Just give him the opportunity. And if you can't do it, hey, man, then you know what? Your life, if you want to keep fighting, you're going to be the gatekeeper.
Yep.
But if you do it, I just don't see Anthony Smith being a champion in that division.
Yeah, I don't either, but I would like to see. I think the Blachowicz fight is that one where, like, if he can go in, beat Blachowicz, they can sort out. I think Poatan said Yuri's the next one, which, sorry, Uncle Iev. Like, yeah, what the fuck? But then, you know, I think if he beats Blachowicz, then he could at least talk his shit and be like, hey, like, Poatan, you know, everyone's scared of this dude. Like, I'm not. Yeah. Let's go. And you could give him.
Well, here's the thing, to kind of get off subject a little bit, but John Jones has Poatan's name in his mouth.
Yeah.
And if I'm Poatan, even if I defend my belt one more time and John Jones is calling for me to say, like, a legendary fight, Poatan's not scared of nobody.
Oh,
he's going to take it, but not a good fight for Poatan. No way.
No. I mean, it's hard to say John Jones is a good fight for anybody.
But like, Tom Aspinall is the one that you're thinking, okay, maybe he can, like, size, but I would watch it. I would love to watch it. But if Poatan has John Jones in his peripheral, like, we might have one more light heavyweight defense from him before he goes
into John. I hope not. I mean, as much as I would love to see that fight, I hope not, because this division has just been in shambles.
Correct.
Since John Jones. It's crazy that one man has led to such uncertainty within a division for like a decade.
Yeah.
And even after he leaves the division is cause for all this uncertainty and stuff in the division. It's wild.
Yeah.
I wonder
GOAT, man.
Yeah. I wonder how much of that for him is a bit of a power play kind of thing for Jones of just like, oh, I control this.
Well, probably. So. I mean, he's had some series of tweets even talking about, like, you know, you guys are he's really saying things like everyone's going to criticize me. It took me 3 years to get to heavyweight and I'm scared of people. He's like, I beat all your favorite fighters. All your favorite fighters are stars because I beat them. And it's like, yeah, it probably is a power play, but you're that guy, you know, and everybody's saying that he's scared of Tom Aspinall. John Jones isn't scared of anybody, but he's at a point in his career where I don't need to take a fight that I don't want to take. I'm going to take the fights that are going to make me excited.
Well, John Jones hasn't beaten all of my favorite fighters. All right. Because until Diego Sanchez gets the opportunity to teach him a lesson, and old Johnny Bones can't say that.
Oh, man. Title fight?
Yeah, let's talk title fight. The I thought that 49-46 Pantoja was a questionable card.
Yeah. Wow.
I thought Urseg 1, 2 through 4. Yeah, personally,
I think you're wrong.
Yeah. But I also think possibly 3 is the swing round. 3 and 2 were both very close. I thought Urseg clearly won 4.
Easy. Pantoja did nothing pretty much.
Yeah. I think there's and I don't know what the cards, I haven't looked at the cards yet, but I imagine it had to be on the other two judges' cards. It was 2-2 going into round 5, and then Pantoja clearly won round 5.
Yeah.
Interesting fight. Pantoja came out shot out of a cannon, as we expect from him, but I thought it was very interesting that a couple minutes in, he backed off.
Yeah, so we talked about this last week. His style is so weird because he looks exhausted. He looked exhausted after the first round. Mm-hmm. It's just whatever it is in him, that's just his fighting style, right? Yeah. But so live, I thought 1-3-5 for Pantoja. The cut was dirty, but
gnarly.
But they stopped the bleeding really well. Mm-hmm. Like, they really did stop the bleeding. So, but goddamn, like, here's the reality of this fight is, my nerves were going into it because I'm like, man, if Urseg's not ready for this and he takes this fight and he loses, this might be his only chance. No. This guy gets another chance because, goddamn, he looked good, right? Yeah. Like, he didn't win. And he showed in the 5th round, he made the same mistake twice. He tried to take down Pantoja and got reversed twice.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's going to make you lose the fight because now you have to stop him. So there's that growth that he's going to have. But standing on the feet, he pushed forward the whole time. Even when Pantoja in the first round really like blitzing and stuff, he still was walking forward.
Yes.
He's special on the feet. He's big.
Mm-hmm.
He deserves to be there. I gained a lot of respect. I hope the UFC keeps that, and I think they will, right? They know talent. He did a lot better than I thought. Didn't get knocked out, didn't get submitted. Did grab the fence, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because earlier in the night, see a fence grab the first time, and
the Oral Brunner fight.
And they call for a point immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I think Urseg gets taken down as well, and they don't call a point.
Yeah.
Different referee.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, Urseg looks so good, but Pantoja's that fucking dude.
Yep. He's one of those guys that you can just never count out.
Mm-mm.
You know, he is. It doesn't matter how exhausted he is, how out of the fight it may appear he is, you know, the momentum swing. One of the things that he does so incredibly well is he finds a way when the momentum swings away from him to bring it back to him. So end of round 2, Urseg starts getting off a little bit with the counters. I mean, he starts he starts taking over a little bit end of round 2. Well, then round 3, Pantoja starts to rein it back in.
Yep.
Right? Middle of the round, Urseg starts connecting again. Hurts him, busts him up. Pantoja stops him dead in his tracks. Has him against the fence, right? Is holding him there. Round 4, once again, the momentum swings to Urseg. It was the clearest round for Urseg in the fight.
Looked like Pantoja was taking that one off.
Yes, right. Yes. And then round 5 comes around, and Urseg makes a mistake, admittedly, but Pantoja does what he needs to do to win that round. I found it very interesting that Urseg's camp told him he was down 3-0.
Yeah, it was weird.
After 3 rounds, I get close rounds saying, hey, we're giving that to our opponent.
In Rio.
I understand that, but also, in a fight like that, did that lead to Urseg taking some chances in round 5 because he thought he needed the finish?
Yeah, but he was going to get the finish on the ground, though? No.
But I just don't know if that played into his strategy round 5 of like, hey, I'm losing this fight and I have to do something different because staying on the feet has not done it for me so far.
Yeah, but if you think you have to finish and you're Steve Urseg, I don't see how taking Pantoja down in the 5th round is going to get you a finish. I think it's a little inexperience. A little fatigue comes in.
Yeah.
Right? Fatigue comes in that 5th. And maybe even if your coach is telling that, he might be like, I won 2 of these rounds.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I feel like I've won 2 of these rounds and just trying to get the dub. It felt to me that he thought he had 2 rounds in the bag and trying to get the 3rd. But Pantoja, he's so slick. Mm-hmm. His ground, his grappling, his control, even the way I can't think of another fighter that I've seen pull someone to their like chest so much, like when they're behind him. He just does it so well. Pantoja's amazing, and there's something about, like you said, there's something about him where the control of, I mean, the momentum swing shift, you felt it almost at the end of every single round where you're like, even in round two, I'm like, yeah, he switched it. I just don't think he did enough. Mm-hmm. And then in round three, I thought he did enough to swing it. I'm like, if round four, he lost 4 minutes of that fight. And then at the end, you're like, God, how does he do this? Yeah. And maybe that's like his own mental thing that I'm up at the end of the round. So coming into the next round, I feel good. Whatever it is. But how amazing he is, I do want to give props to Ursig, because give that man somebody else in the top five.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what he's going to be ranked. That's going to be interesting Tuesday.
Yeah, for all, well, the flyweight rankings are just stupid, because we talked about it last week with Alex Perez.
You're correct.
Who lost to Muhammad Makhachev.
No.
And then beat number 11 Matt Schnell. So Perez sitting at number 8. Beats number 11 Matt Schnell after losing to Muhammad Makhachev.
No, he beat Mateus
Nicolau. Oh, sorry, Mateus Nicolau. I have Schnell on the mind from him getting knocked out and seizing.
You don't have to have the seizing part, yeah, then.
Sorry, number 5, Mateus Nicolau. Beats him. And then leapfrogs Muhammad Makhachev, even though they had fought like a month before and he lost.
Yeah, makes sense.
The rankings are done.
Where's the confusion?
So 8 beats 5. So we're just going to flip-flop those two.
Yeah, I don't know. How, when you texted me on Tuesday and said, make this make sense, I can't. It doesn't make sense. It's, and it's like, I don't get it. Unless there's like something in the background. They don't like Makhachev. But regardless.
Yeah, makes no sense.
I don't know where Steve Ursek's going to be, but he'll probably be ranked 4.
You know? Yeah, exactly. He's going to lose and move up in the rankings. Yeah. But I mean, he definitely showed he belongs. And it goes back to something that talked about last week. The top 10 of flyweight is so fluid. Like, any of those guys can beat each other. Obviously, right now, Pantoja is showing that there's something about his competitive nature and his mindset that is setting him apart from those other guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a Kamaru Usman type situation where, yeah, he has a ton of really great physical skills, but physically he's not that much greater, or skill for skill that much greater than the people that he's beating.
Mm-hmm.
But it is that championship mental. It is that ultimate competitor. And you talked about him, you know, being up at the end of each round. I think that's a mental competitive thing.
Yeah.
You know, like we've heard DC talk about, he was so into being competitive for wrestling that he won't sleep on his back. He said he legitimately, like, as a kid, got into his brain, like, I'm never on my back. So he doesn't sleep on his back. Like, that's that little bit of craziness that, like, to be the best in the world, you have to have. I definitely think Pantoja has that type of mentality.
Something. Yeah, there's also a prove a point in him that I see. I mean, we saw it with him saying like about his father and stuff. Mm-hmm. But even just I would imagine he's like a Jordan S type of guy where he's always the underdog in his mind, right? Even if he's confident out loud, like that thing where it's like, oh, you think you're better than me? Everyone thinks you're better than me.
What, and you think you're better than me?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the problem with that division, though, how you're saying it's pretty fluid, I agree with you, but a lot of these people already fought Pantoja. Mm-hmm. So there is a part where, like, okay, what does Ursig learn from this? And I guarantee you he's better the next time out. Yeah. But everyone's fought Pantoja. Sure, someone's going to figure him out eventually, but right now you guys haven't. So you guys are all getting better, and you're still not on that level. It's fun, man. The flyweight's so fun.
Yeah, the thing that's unfortunate right now about it is everyone's calling for Makhachev to get the next shot. I think it's too early for Makhachev. I think he needs... beating Alex Perez does not get you a title shot, I don't think.
Doesn't even get especially you ranked when you're
23. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, it did for a week. But I think he needs one more of those top five wins before it's like, okay, this makes sense. Amir Albazi was going to be the guy, but now that he's been out for as long as he was, and in retrospect, I still don't think he won that fight against Kai Car France. I thought he lost it.
I agree.
Mon-El Kopp, and I know they fought, but like Mon-El Kopp needs to do something You can't miss weight. You can't pull out of fights. Yeah. Like, you have to string some stuff together in order for people to believe that you're that guy. So as talented and fluid as the top 10 is, it's going to be interesting to see who they get for him next.
Well, the thing with Manuel Cobb, I think the one thing he has over everybody else right now is his mouth. Yeah. Like he just came out and was like, of course I can beat these people in street fights. They don't fight street fights. They, you know, he's like, so he's trying to convince people that at him as a flyweight can beat Izzy, mm-hmm. like one of the greatest middleweights of all time. But like, he has that where people are going to be like, well, I want to see him lose. And whether you want to see him win or lose, if I want to tune in, I'm getting that. So
yeah,
he might have that.
Yeah. And somebody who used to fight like every fight was a street fight, because thank you, Pride rules. My man Shogun getting into the Hall of Fame. Good, you knew him. They were going to have some kind of announcement going to Rio to get Shogun into the Hall of Fame is awesome. And the fact that they were just showing a bunch of Pride highlights where he's like stomping people's head into the ground. I mean, you want to go back, you want to watch violence, like go back and watch that man's run through Pride. Yeah. It was wild. You know, I don't want to outright accuse people of PED usage, but he was definitely a different fighter in the UFC. I mean, it was very evident in the first Forrest Griffin fight when he came to the UFC and then figured it out, you know, and ultimately was a champion in the UFC too. And then always good to see those guys get their due. I think, you know, obviously he hung around a little too long. You know, when you're losing to Ihor Poterio as a retirement fight, like, it's a little unfortunate to see, but absolutely love that he's getting his shine. I do like that they are, by they I mean the UFC, and I get Shogun was a champ in the UFC too, but that they're really kind of giving respect to some of the Pride guys too. Unfortunately, it'll never happen for Fedor.
Yeah, of course not.
But I do like that, you know, it's like, hey, we get Shogun was a champion here, but like, look, it's really about what this guy did up until this point. And I remember when the UFC first acquired Pride and thinking like, oh, that dude is a motherfucker. It was when I was first like learning about the fighters over in Pride. It was when you and I were living together in Florida back in like 06 and seeing what he was doing. Cause obviously it was like, oh shit, Rampage, you know, started watching his fights. And then it was, you know, Vanderlei, who had some familiarity with just because of his UFC stuff, but it was like, oh, and then who's this other guy out of that camp that's just running through people? And
like you said, violently. And yes. I like what DC said. He was like, when we watched him in the UFC, he wasn't even in his prime anymore. It's like, so the Shogun Pride run was like, and PEDs or not, whatever, you know, we don't know, but
yeah. Everyone's on steroids.
In Pride, everyone was on steroids.
But even the UFC in that time, like when they weren't testing, you know, when their testing was kind of a joke, like you look back at guys, you're like, oh my God.
I mean, they even talk about it where it's like, you know, after the fight, they're like, can you pee? You know, it's one of those things. But yeah, it was good to see it. I wasn't expecting Shogun. You know, like you said, there's going to be an announcement. I wasn't expecting Shogun, so it was fun to watch.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And he looked super grateful and like, prideful in that moment of like, and it's got to feel good. It's so weird too though, because like he's the modern era wing, right?
Yeah.
And then you think about how the Hall of Fame looks, the people that are getting inducted, but then you think about it in 20 years and it's like the skill gap is going to be insane, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like it's going to look like, how are these guys in the U.S. or in the Hall of Fame? It's because it's just the evolution of sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you go and look at like the NFL Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly.
One, there's something different about how some of the guys look prior to a certain to a certain time.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, you look at it and you have like offensive linemen that are 220 pounds, right?
Yeah, you're like,
that's,
yeah.
Yeah, that's you know, a decent sized wide receiver nowadays. But yeah, and you want to talk about this next generation of fighters. We saw a few really, really good ones last night. Yasmin Lucindo, who we're very high on, showed the difference between this generation and the previous generation.
Yep.
Really just beat up Karolina Kovalkiewicz.
Kovalkiewicz looked old in there last night. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she was getting pieced up.
Yeah.
And it was reassuring to see Lucindo listen to her corner, too. It was like they told her before round three, hey, you got to get the takedown. And what does she do within 20 seconds? Shoots for the takedown.
Yep.
Like, or clinched up to go for the takedown. It was really good to see her listen. And then also just not let the moment be too big for her. She stayed safe, and she busted her up.
Well, and that's the thing. The first round, I literally is what I put. Lucinda looks faster and stronger in the first and mm-hmm. tags Carolina with one left and almost shuts her eye. Like with yes. one left. Okay, so she's got the power and the accuracy to do so. Second round, she just looks a little bit better overall. Third round, you're like, Carolina has nothing for her. But that's what's supposed to happen. That's what you just, she's just so young that you're mm-hmm. like, is she ready yet? You're like, that's what's supposed to happen. Here's the downside of that. Now she's there, right? Yep. Now she's there at 22 years old, right? Yep. And does she look like a champion? No, not right now. Is she exciting? Absolutely. I think the thing that's endearing about her, at least for me, she just seems so like that youthful excitement is just in her blood.
Yeah.
And you're like, I want to see her. Her energy is what I want to see. But some of the good qualities about her, first of all, she has the talent. She mm-hmm. looked at her corner. I mean, even during the fight, she's looking like, what yeah. should I do? What should I do here? But the problem is going to be is that when someone doesn't have to think about what to do and they naturally can do it, she's going to be in trouble. Yep. So even though she's, man, even though she, you know, just beat Carolina, you got to imagine she's going to break the top 15.
Yeah.
Somehow you have to have her be slow in the top 15.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's ways to do it. I don't think you get her in there with, you know, if Baby Shark beats Tisha Pennington, used to be Tisha Torres. If she beats her, I don't think you get her involved with the Baby Sharks, the Loopies, the other young fighters. And I also don't think you try to rush it. You don't worry about her getting up there with like a Hebus, a Mackenzie Dern. Like, slow all that down. If you want her to fight another old head, you could do Michelle Watterson Gomez.
You have to.
I would rather see Angela Hill. Just because
I think Angela Hill has too much in her for Loopy right now. Like Angela
For Lucinda.
I'm sorry, for yep. Lucinda. I think Angela Hill's that person that like can expose.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it. We've seen it with Angela Hill that she has something about her that's like she can win and she mm-hmm. can make people look kind of bad. I think you give her Watterson.
See, and I think
Watterson Gomez.
I think even though Angela Hill is a better fighter than Watterson Gomez at this point,
yeah,
I think Watterson Gomez still has somewhat of a name. And I think if Lucindo beats her, the call then is for a bigger opponent than if she beats Angela Hill. And I think Angela Hill is a tougher test, but I don't think either woman really presents much danger from the standpoint of Lucindo getting finished by them.
Correct.
But I think that Angela Hill, you know, is not going to go anywhere. But she's also going to be firing back the entire time. Yeah. She is going to test your gas tank because she is all volume all the time. I think from a building Lucindo up standpoint, I think Angela Hill would make a lot of sense. Watterson Gomez, yes, you could do it 100%. I just think that...
I think that's a winnable fight. I think Angela Hill is going to be hard for me to be like confident that... that Lucindo can win.
I think it's a way, though, for you to still test her in a winnable fight.
Yeah, but then if you go Angela Hill,
mm-hmm.
then you have to go Tabitha Ricci. Then you have to go Loopy. Then you have to go Pineda. I can't say the name.
Yeah.
If you go Gomez, then you can do Anderson. I mean, Angela Hill. You know what I'm saying? Like, for me, yeah. it gives her two fights in the top 15. Unless you just say, well, what do you think she's going to be ranked? You know, I mean...
Well, if the...
Do you think that, like, Jillian Robertson gets kicked out?
I think Kovalkiewicz gets kicked out. I think they okay. just put Lucindo at 13.
Okay, so if you even give her, like, if you give her Robertson and then Gomez and then Hill, she gets three fights in the top 15, lower end of the top 15. If you do Watterson, but if you do Hill, you can't do Hill and then Gomez, or Watterson Gomez.
Now, we do have Robertson is fighting Watterson Gomez on the 29th.
Okay, see.
Okay. But what you then could do is potentially the winner of that fight. Or you say, hey, if Watterson Gomez wins, we're going to have Lucinda Watterson Gomez. If Watterson Gomez loses, you know, Jillian Robertson's still young, we'll do Angela Hill, Lucinda. Could potentially do that. There's still fun ones outside of the top 15.
Take her slowly in the 15.
Yes.
Yeah. Take her slowly. That's what we're trying to say.
Yeah. Right? Like, don't do what it looked like they were going to do with Tatsuro Taira until Tim Elliott couldn't fight. Like, we don't need to see these really young fighter. Like, we just saw it with Petrino. Like, do not rush these people that have talent, but obviously still have, like, very clear deficiencies to their game as well.
And you know what else I don't need to see anymore? Poking someone's shin with your finger into their shin hole.
Their shin hole.
Ugh. So, Joe Anderson, Brito, Jack Shore. First of all, leg kicks were insane. Brito's leg kicks to him were insane. But once he cracks it, from a distance, you just see it's bleeding. You're like, okay, maybe it's a little cut.
Yeah.
Why are they zooming in? First of all, the referee is like, I don't remember the word, what it is that people like to see other people in pain. But his finger was inside of it.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
Don't do
sadist.
That. Yeah, there you go. Don't do that. And sure, not even wincing, you know, probably thinking like, I can't show any pain because they're going to stop it. Do you think they should have stopped the fight?
No.
Okay, me either, right?
Because I've never seen... Now, the initial thought was that he had broken his leg. That's what they said was the ringside physician thought he broke his leg.
Okay, well, if that's what he thought, I would stop it.
Leg wasn't broken.
Yeah.
I have never seen a ref stop a fight for a cut anywhere other than the face.
Yeah. Oh, good point. Yeah.
So, I like that
maybe
was...
Maybe the ref thought his leg was broke, too.
Yeah, like that was just a weird... calling the doctor in for that, and his leg was swollen up like a balloon already. I mean, it was bad.
God, it's gross.
But we tend to not see that. I would get if between rounds, if you're like, hey, let's have the doctor come look at this because this is kind of fucked up here.
There was probably, what, like 2 minutes left maybe?
Yeah, there was not a ton of time left in the round.
3:30. Yeah, so there's 3:30,
like a minute and a half left in the round. Yeah, was Jack Shore going to... win that fight? I don't think so. Was it going to continue to get worse because Brito is a sicko and was just continuing to batter the leg? Yes.
Probably so. Yes. For sure.
But I think that was an unfortunate one for sure. Not for sure, but for Jack Shore. Because here's a guy who he was not, no pain. He was wasn't showing pain.
At all.
Was,
like, not even with the leg kicks. Not even like how we saw earlier in the night.
Yeah, with Borjas like, oh, that was one. Get me out of here. That was wild. But yeah, it's just unfortunate to see it end like that. Great performance from Brito. Because, I mean, we have seen this guy just rough people up.
Yeah.
And he was talking shit to Jack Shore's corner. Like, this is a fun, exciting human being.
Oh, yeah, when he was pushed up. Yeah, he was pushed up against the gate. So, first of all, one of the judges for that, judges for that fight, last name's Cartledge. Just bizarre.
Ben Cartledge.
Yeah. But to your point real quick, it's like the doctor was like, I want to poke it. Like, stop the fight. I want to poke it. It's just really weird. I never thought about not having a fight stop in the middle. But if they thought it was broken, if they were being fair and they thought it was broken, I'm okay with it. Like, if they're like, dude, his leg is broken, we got to stop this. But even then, like, if they're still walking, I don't think it should have been stopped. If the doctor would have got his little rocks off, poking it in between rounds and stopped it, I would have been like, okay, I get it, right? But yeah, it's weird to stop it in the middle.
Really. Yeah, it's like a doctor stoppage due to shin laceration is a weird stoppage to a fight. But don't want that to take away from Brito's performance because that was amazing. A dismantling of a very talented fighter. You don't fight 18 times professionally and only lose once and be average, right?
Yeah, he threw so many leg kicks. So you know Brito's next opponent's going to be like, I got to watch out for leg kicks.
We might want to check those.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I don't even think checking them is going to matter.
Yeah.
I think he throws them regardless.
He's he's an animal.
Yeah,
and fun. I think for a fight for him moving forward, there's a lot of fun ones. You could have the Sadiq fight with him coming off the loss to Diego Lopez. You could have Lerone Murphy. If Lerone Murphy gets through Barbosa, I mean, that's another fun one. But also you could have the Lopez rematch. Because as much as Lopez has been on this star trajectory, more so than Brito, they fought and Brito holds the win.
Yeah.
You know, and I know Lopez said, I think he said he wanted to fight Dan Ige. Yeah. I get that. It's a name. You get old 50K on your resume. Like, that's a good one. But I think with the way Brito talks shit, he might be able to talk himself into, like, what are you talking about fighting Dan Ige? Like, I already beat you.
Yeah, if I'm Lopez, I don't take that fight, though. I'm trying to get up.
I would agree.
I'm not even for like a scare type of thing. Just like a, you know, yeah, you beat me, but we're in the UFC now. I'm on a trajectory up. I don't need to fight down.
Yes,
but I want to fight. I want to see. I don't want to fight anybody, dude. I want to see Lopez fight everyone. So yes. I wouldn't mind seeing it, but I'd rather see Lopez right now fight. He's ranked. I'd rather see him fight up. Or someone that's still ranked, and then have Brito get into the rankings and then talk his shit.
The fact that Brito's not in the rankings is pretty remarkable at this point, just with the performances he's putting on against people. I think, you know, once Murphy or Barboza loses in that fight in a couple of weeks, I think he's in the rankings.
That's a really good point.
And a fight that we thought was going to be fight of the night, and it looked like it was shaping up to be until just complete and utter exhaustion settled in. Mutebek Uraibai and Elvis Brenner. I mean, Uraibai looked amazing for about a round and a half. But it was almost that Hamzat, like, fired out of a cannon. And if you're sprinting and you can't get it with that style, that's tough.
Yeah, and Uraibai start early, cracks Brenner early, gets the takedown, and have really good ground and pound, like really nasty ground heavy. And pound. But the thing with Brenner is, like, you're gonna have to stop him, like you know you're gonna have to stop him. But Herdman in the second, Brenner looked exhausted in the second. For him to come out in the third and kind of be the fresher guy says a lot. But Uraibai dominated those first two rounds. And then they take a point from Uraibai on the fence grab, which was really quick. And I almost, the commentate, like, Felder and DC swayed my opinion of it. But I'm like, God, we just don't see it, and it feels weird, right?
Yeah. But the first time, yes. Yeah. Like, the very first one. Now, we've talked about it. They probably should take a point on more occasions.
But it has to be consistent.
Yes, exactly. Like you talked about later on, you know, guys grabbing cages and it's not.
Steve Ursa, he grabbed the cage and it stopped him from getting a takedown and saved him. Or stopped him getting taken down and saved him. And then by the time Pantoja did get him down, he got reversed. Yeah. You know, so it's like.
And Karatsukeda grabbed the cage multiple times. There you go. Point. What saved Uraibai from a draw was knocking Brenner down with a few seconds left. If he doesn't do that,
4 seconds.
That's 10-8 because of the point deduction for Brenner, and you're looking at a draw.
Yeah, I was really. I agree, because I was like, Uraibai shouldn't win this fight. He should win this fight, you know.
And he's clearly the better fighter,
100%. And that's another thing. Brenner looked off. I don't know if Brenner looked off or if he looked overwhelmed, but like that's not the guy we usually see.
Correct.
You know, it's so I really think on that first round, there was one point where Brenner's on his back and he's really active off his back, but he looked like, I don't know what to do.
I think, and who knows, everyone was talking about how hot it was in there.
Yeah.
He might have broken the first round a little bit.
You think so?
Because about 3 minutes in, when he finally got back to his feet in the first round, he looked exhausted.
Yeah,
and it was round one.
But didn't he look a little Willem Dafoe, though? Like, a little, like, I don't know what the fuck to do.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's what this fight is going to be? Like, this is, like, not what I thought.
Yeah.
And I think there was a little bit of that, like, oh, if that's what this is going to be, I gotta get ready here, because that's not
which is still pleasant. Weird. But I agree with you, but it's just not, it doesn't seem like his personality, so... But Uraibai, man, come on. Dude's special.
Yes. Yeah, you shore up the gas tank a little bit there, and we are going to have some fun performances from that guy. And you know who I think is going to benefit the most, and we'll talk about it on the Wednesday episode? Slava Klaus. Because you have the same weight class as Uraibai, training out of the same camp. You're telling me Slava having to fight off of that dude on a daily basis isn't going to make him a better, more well-rounded fighter.
That's the best point.
Yeah, I mean, that's a... Yes, look for those two guys, because that's... I mean, iron sharpens iron, and, like, Uraibai, he clearly has power. Every time he was touching Brenner, it was, like, big reactions.
Head popping back and shit.
Yeah. Uraibai's an exciting one. I hope you know, this is the first time he cut down to 155 in a while. So maybe the gas tank stuff gets shorn up. You know, maybe he realizes like, all right, I can't sprint. You know, I'm not Trevor Peak. I can't sprint to the finish here. But great, great performance. And then another prospect that is, I think we saw some special stuff last night, and that was Mauricio Huffy against Jamie Mularkey.
Bro, like, how excited are you about this guy?
The level of confidence to come out and go Cody Garbrandt Mortal Kombat sweep calf kick just right off the bat.
And
is,
it work.
Yes, is impressive. To be that loose in a moment like that, your UFC debut in your home country, you're like, cool, I'm going to do that.
With all the swagger in the world. Now, I do like Dean Thomas's comment about McGregor.
Yes. Because
you're like, God, he does have that swagger. But the difference is like you said, I'm so loose. I'm so confident right now. Like, nothing's going to hurt me. Let me sweep you. And then let me hit you with the right, knee you, and then just brutally beat your ass. Like, dude, it was that one, because I knew at that point you hadn't, like, you weren't caught up yet. And I was like, God, hurry up. And the first, when you said you're finally on, I think you were two fights behind.
Yeah.
But I knew you were past that one. It's the first one I want to talk about.
Yeah.
I like, God, I can't wait to see. And he didn't get hurt. He didn't, I don't even know if he got touched.
Yeah.
Have him fight as soon as possible.
As soon as possible.
He's got something special about him. That was fun. Now, sure. Can he get exposed? Yeah, whatever.
Of course.
But he didn't. And I want to see him fight next weekend.
That's... And I love Dean Thomas's comparison. Yeah. And it's, you know, everyone always gets compared to McGregor. But the thing that was interesting about the comparison here is it wasn't about being a flashy shit talker.
Exactly.
It was about a level of confidence, distance management, mm-hmm. and precision and striking that led to that comparison.
And you saw it.
Yes. Yeah. Even the kind of hands down, knowing, having that level of confidence in his range, kind of firing from the hip a little bit. When he was throwing the straight, it looked similar to that Conor straight.
It did.
That was a great comparison. He dives in on the scissor sweep, like shades of Rio Chonin versus Anderson Silva. I mean,
That's right.
Yeah, just wild stuff.
Your memory's insane sometimes, dude.
I was doing some Silva research for the...
Just take the compliment, man.
I'm just saying for the... I'm doing a plug here, okay, for the article I wrote on Fanside and MMA about Anderson Silva and Yushin Okami.
Well, I mean, like, we...
Go over there, you know?
We would know about it, but... There's probably some things I should follow. I don't know.
Yeah. At YFF Jared on X. That is where you'll be able to get links to all the stuff I'm doing on Fansided. Also at number 1 BS Pod. So that way you can see our fight picks. DJ, I know you are the far superior fight picker. Proved it this week once again. And
you're welcome.
Also the featured prelim polls. And then most of the time it's live during the pay-per-views, but Daddy Duty does call and was a little late getting caught up. Also on your podcast listening service of choice. Follow, like, subscribe.
Do it.
Oh, and the far superior fighter guy. I saw some live posts last night. There, maybe.
Yeah. You're going to get a little post today about this live in-person. It's an in-person podcast.
Yeah.
Love seeing your face in person, man. Sometimes the Zoom is not flattering to me, for sure.
Yeah, I wish I could say the same, but you know.
Hey, man, come on, bro.
And that is at YFF_DJ.
Follow me, you nerds. But yeah, what were we just talking about? Oh, Huffy.
Huffy, I mean, being a dog.
Like, yeah, and that's the thing is, the swagger is what got me. It mm-hmm. was just this confidence of like, I'm untouchable. It's what got me excited about McGregor. It's like, the shit talking came later, where it was like, oh God, he's figured something out.
Mm-hmm.
It was the swagger that he had. And he just, like, after the fight's done, he just looks like another day at the office. You know, like, I'm not going to make this a bigger deal than it is. I'm going to soak in the moment. Dude, next weekend, please.
Yeah.
You know.
He's going to be one we're talking about every week. Like, whenever he's fighting, he's going
to
be.
Get used to it.
We will be talking about that, man, because that was a hell of a debut. And the performance he put on allowed him to have a slower path.
Yep.
As crazy as that sounds, like for him to come in and do that to Jamie Mularkey, like you're thinking, hey, let's get this guy going. No. Now with a performance like that, it's like, okay, we got something here. let's make sure that we allow this guy to pass the test, similar to a McGregor, right? Where it was like, where, you know, he wasn't three fights in and fighting for a title or anything. It was like, all right, let's pass the next test. Let's pass the next test. And I think Huffy earned the right to be brought along in that fashion, similar to O'Malley, where it's like, okay, you put on some of these performances. Yeah, we're not going to throw you to the wolves because we think we have something here. And we have something.
We have something here, dude. Yeah. We also have something with busted leg. Kevin Borjas versus Alessandro Costa throws a leg kick, the first leg kick, and like it clearly was like, this is a problem.
Oh, the very first one, he's like limping. I was like, oh, that's
limping.
Bad news bears.
Yes. I understand now, like, you see it too much. People are like, leg kicks are more powerful than people mm-hmm. even realize. But when you have a professional athlete that gets leg kicked in the hurt on the first one, ouch.
Yeah.
Amazing.
If you're getting into, I would imagine, if you were getting into MMA nowadays, it has to be as basic as throwing a jab.
Oh, yeah.
Like, checking low leg kicks.
Absolutely.
Because whether it's somebody beating up the inside like a Jonathan Martinez does, or it is getting your calf brutalized, it seems like that would be as basic of a defense as, you know, slipping your head away from the jab. It's because it changes the fight so quickly and just makes it so people can't even defend.
Well, yeah, when you can't walk. And it's funny, my notes is, throws another leg kick and Borjas is hurting bad. Two more leg kicks back to back and Borjas can't switch stances, and they called him out. They're like, yep, he can't switch stances. And that's another problem, is that once you're hurt, you can't even take the damage on the other side. But once he gets mounted, you know, like, I'm sure that once he got mounted, it's like, I can't even stand.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, what a way to start off this card. Leg kicks are so fun to watch.
Yes.
They just are.
Yeah.
And then, like you're saying, you're starting in MMA. On the other side of that, you saw Aldo gradually get better at checking it. That's what experience happens.
Figure that timing out.
Yeah, people that throw leg kicks and have to block them.
So. And especially if you're there was a period in MMA where it was like, if you can, the old sprawl and brawl, like if you can throw with your hands, you don't have to learn a bunch of grappling defense. You need to learn to sprawl so you don't get taken down. And if you get taken down, you need to learn to stand up.
Yeah.
Now it's like, if you can box and you have great hands, you have to learn to check leg kicks, right? Because you're going to have weight on your front leg. People are going to attack your calf. So you either better be able to time that, or you better be able to time the right hand to make them pay for trying to kick your leg.
Absolutely.
One or the other.
Great card, man.
Yeah, hell of a card. The pay-per-views, you know, we talked about it last week. They live up to the hype.
Every time.
Yeah, and now what I love about a card like this is we now have so many fun things to look forward to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Huffy's next fight, Steve Urseg when he comes back out there, Joe Anderson Brito. Like, we just, there's all the Bahalio. If you're not a bigger fan of Bahalio, if you're not a bigger fan of Michel Pajeda than you were going into Saturday night. I was waiting for you to bring up it. Yeah, like that's what I love really about this sport too, is there's something about game sports, like football, like hockey, where there's a finality to each game.
Yeah.
And I coached football for 10 years and I very rarely had that feeling of like, oh, I cannot wait to watch these guys play again, to watch this team perform again. With mixed martial arts.
Unless it's your team, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. Like if you're coaching, like you get a good win, like I can't wait till we go out there and beat somebody else up. But with MMA, there's something about, you see a performance, it's like, oh, I can't wait to see what that performance looks like against this person. You start speculating, you start having these thoughts, and that's what makes this so much fun for me, is you see something like that, you can appreciate it, you can enjoy it, but then also your mind immediately goes to, ooh, well, how do they match up with this person?
Even with the losses, like, we're really talking about, you just said Steve Urseg's next fight. Well, he lost. Why would you be excited? Because he looked great.
Yeah.
And it's his performance against somebody else can win him a fight. Yes. It's just Pantoja. Yeah. The pay-per-views are always get me excited. The live events get me excited. The Apex ones are a little tough for me sometimes because, I mean, the cards are a little less, quote, stacked.
Yeah.
But, like, that audience, like, even the I'm gonna butcher this, but the Uvai Morer, whatever you say, that chant is just like, that's evil, dude. But it's like, it brings another dynamic into it. I think the reason why, I'll bring up Conor McGregor, I think the reason why his stardom is what it is because he never fell in the big moments, and the crowd was probably like, it's like he got more skills from the crowd, but then you look at some of these Factor X people and they're messing up their moments. It all makes a difference. 301 was a great card.
Oh, yeah.
And our next card is damn Islam. You know what I'm saying? Like, crazy.
Next pay-per-view,
Next pay-per-view, I'm sorry,
And then we have a couple announcements, not a ton this week, but Alex Perez back in the cage again in June. So really,
the rightful number five in the
The number five should be number five, should definitely be above Mokaev. If only there was a way to figure out who the better fighter was. I don't know, maybe have him fight or something. I don't know.
You're talking
crazy over here. But Perez getting back in the cage, which we love to see, for somebody who was not able to make it to the cage so frequently, and taking on Tagir Ulanbekov, who he was supposed to be fighting before, and then there was the short notice replacement when Cop got hurt, and Perez filled in against Nicolau, not Matt Schnell, DJ, not Matt Schnell, Mateusz Nicolau.
My bad, man.
So, awesome fight. Kind of sucks for Perez fighting down, but
he needs to get back in the cage.
Yeah, and that weight class, like, there's anybody could beat anybody except for maybe beating Pantoja.
And he looked really good in his last fight, so it's like, okay.
Yeah, so excited for that one, June 15th. That is in the Apex. I have to imagine that's going to be the main event. They haven't announced whether it is or isn't, but I have to imagine that's the main event. And then UFC 304, which is the pay-per-view in Manchester, July 27th. They have one of two official fights so far, and this is kind of the first big one, first one that we know is going to be a main card fight. We have number six, Arnold Allen, taking on number nine, Giga Chikadze. Going to be a fun
one. Really good fight. Arnold, you know, he needs to bounce back, get the dub. Not excited about the time slot for these fighters having the fight. I think it's kind of shitty. I understand, you know, they're probably thinking people in the United States are going to buy the pay-per-view, whatever, but Aspinall has come out and said kind of like the time slot is stupid, and I agree with them.
Yeah, I mean, Manchester money isn't Saudi Arabia money or you know, Dubai money. Like, ultimately, that's what it boils down to, right? There's a reason that when the pay-per-views go to UAE, it's the middle of the day.
Correct.
Because the people that are paying to have that event go on there have the kind of money.
Got where, some deep pockets.
Yeah, where it's like, hey, no, we're not. I don't want to be up at 3 a.m. We're doing this in the time I want to be awake.
And the UFC goes, okay, you're good.
And so I wonder kind of what the agreement is there with England. I think part of it, I don't know if we would see this if it was in London. I think Manchester not necessarily being
fair,
you know, the premium, quote unquote, premium location in England, I think has something to do with it too. Like, hey, Manchester, you guys are getting a pay-per-view. Okay, so be happy about the time slot. It does suck because if, you know, you're Tom Aspinall who fights and trains in England, like, you don't train in the United States. Yeah, exactly. Your body clock is not the United States. So now all of a sudden you're having to fuck up your body clock to fight.
It's probably starting soon too.
Fight a main event at 5 a.m.
Like, yeah, it's goofy.
Who here wants to engage in fisticuffs at 5 a.m?
But honestly, as a fan, I don't know if I want to. Like, that's a long night for me. I mean, I'm 36 years old. I'm like, God damn, that's exhausting. But I mean, I'll be good. I'm just going to be my time here. You know?
Normal for us. Going to be an awesome card. Yeah. So as a American, cool. Anything else on your end?
No, stop.
All right. As always, fight friends. Appreciate y'all for listening. Love and respect.
Later.